You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Tracy Rector. Tracy, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, thanks for asking me to be here.
Tracy, let's talk about what you're doing now. I know you're probably involved in a number of things, but what's happening right now in terms of your work?
Sure, yeah. It's actually incredibly busy right now. That's a good thing. It's a lot to balance, and, it's everything from being on the road doing outreach and engagement for our feature film, Dawnland, about cultural survival and forced removal of Native children. I'm currently a producer on a project called Out of the Muck that's based in Florida, and it's about love, family, and small-town relationships based in the land and history. I am an executive producer on a few projects right now. One's called Manzanar Diverted, and the other is The Sacred and the Snake. I am working on an amazing curatorial show in Seattle, Washington called Yahao, and it's an all-Indigenous, open-source, giant art initiative with my partners Asia Till and Saprit Kolum, and it features about 250 Indigenous artists. Plus 20 partner galleries, so we're kind of trying to take over Seattle or the whole Pacific Northwest region, basically, and then Indigenous art. I feel like I just can continue naming all sorts of great
stuff.
Keep
going. I want to talk about that show, but keep going. And what else? Because you're also, are you still serving as a Seattle Arts Commissioner?
Yeah, I'm a Seattle Arts Commissioner. I'm in my second term, and that's pretty amazing. Our city's at an interesting time because, we're facing, massive changes because of tech industry and new peoples moving to our area, massive development. And so just really thinking more regionally these days rather than city-specific. What else? I'm really excited about, I'm a programmer for the Seattle International Film Festival, and just really excited about that opportunity right now because it's essentially leveraging a massive opportunity for multiples of my peers, and I love that job for that reason, that it's oftentimes a gatekeeper position, and I feel like in partnership with the festival, I'm really able to shine a spotlight on, at least a dozen Native and Indigenous filmmakers creating content right now. So lots of exciting, amazing projects.
Exciting.
My gosh.
Tell me one more. Yeah, what else?
The last thing is we are editing my second virtual reality project called Mildred Bailey Sings, and it's about a Native American jazz singer in the 30s, and we feature Klamath songstress, I'm not sure what you say, Klamath singer, Becca Kirk, and it's just a really fun, lush, interesting project to work on.
And why is it virtual reality? What does that mean? How will it be presented?
Yeah, so it's shot stereoscopic, so it'll be a 3D experience with a headset on. And I just wanted to tell an immersive story that brought people into an era that's little known. And Mildred Bailey was this incredible jazz singer who, for example, was key in initiating Bing Crosby's career. And at one point, she was known as the Queen of Swing. And I think, today not so many people are aware of the contributions that she made to the world of jazz. And so I think virtual reality is a great platform to give people a sense of maybe the dynamics and the sensations and the unique atmospheres of speakeasies.
Oh, will people see that in like a theater with 3D glasses, or how is that presented?
Yeah, no. Currently, we've been using Oculus Go headsets, so it's a pretty individualized experience. But we may do some sort of output for people to see in kind of a theater setting, too.
That's exciting. You are indeed busy. So I want to talk about the show that you're curating. That sounds very exciting. And maybe to begin with, a lot of what you're doing, some of what you've mentioned, is also based in your background, right? Because you're Choctaw and Seminole, you're mixed race. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely bring a triracial lens and life experience to the work that I do. And I feel that especially impacts the way that I program and curate content. And you're right, the show, our show Yahao, is really about decolonizing and or indigenizing, taking up space, creating space, and spotlighting experiences related to Indigenous peoples.
So let's get into that and talk about that a little bit. How was the show curated, and to tap into what you were just saying, how does your triracial background help you as a curator or inform what you're doing as a curator in this particular show? So I guess we could talk about the beginning of this show and again the lens that you're looking through to curate.
So the show, how we began the curatorial process is we put an open call out, and we decided from the beginning, rather than, you know, arbitrarily determining what is art or what's good art or high art, deciding to accept all those who apply to the show. And that's very different. And when we began talking about our process and our decision to do this, we heard from a number of curators that this was, you know, shocking. How are you able to separate out the truly good art from the mediocre submissions? And, you know, it was our stance that it's all about creativity and the process of creativity and creating platforms for multiple persons to be seen and heard. And sometimes just the simple acknowledgement of what you do is important or what you are making has value. Yeah, so basically making the choice to put out our call for artists and not even just referring to the potential applicants as artists, but as creatives, because even sometimes utilizing the word artist we found was a roadblock, as many people in Indigenous community who had been creating work for a long time oftentimes did not see themselves as artists, but culture keepers or just simply doers. And so when we put the call out, we specifically said that everyone who submitted would be accepted. Also, a step that we took in the process that I think was critically important is that we held workshops to help people apply and submit their works or their creative projects. But we also went out to communities and we met with people individually to submit. We wanted to break down as many barriers as possible to the process. And our overall intention was just to show a diverse kaleidoscope of Indigenous makers and creators.
Let me ask you a few questions about that. So,
sure.
Because that is a very unusual approach as a curator and very interesting. So there was an open call, but in this open call, anyone who submitted was accepted. The work wasn't juried. It wasn't selected. Everyone who submitted got into the show. So, and that's correct, right, so far?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then when you did the open call also, the open call was to specific communities. Is that correct? That obviously it wasn't an open call to everyone in Seattle or everyone in the United States or the world. It was targeted to specific communities or several communities. Is that what happened?
Sure, an open call to Indigenous creatives living in or near the Pacific Northwest, so that being broadly defined as Alaska, Canada, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, with also outreach done to Oceania and communities who identify from Indigenous groups within the Pacific Rim region.
Okay, so that's exciting. I mean, you know, the only show I've ever heard that's uncurated like that was, I used to be involved in mail art a little bit, kind of correspondence art, and it was kind of always against kind of curating and selection, so anybody who submitted a show, everything went on the wall. But that was a very different idea, really, than what you're doing, because this is an open call, but it's for people who identify as Indigenous, of course. And so what happened when all this work came in? As other curators have asked you, you had to still hang the work, so there's a type of jurying process going on there. Isn't there, or is there? Because it sounds like it's sort of creating this even playing ground for everybody. But was that problematic at all? Are you really able to assemble the show in a way that gives everybody equal footing and highlights work that's exceptional as opposed to work that's mediocre, as the other curators were saying? Or is that not the goal here?
Yeah, you know, we are currently receiving artwork, and we will be installing towards the end of this month. And the show opens, the centerpiece show, I should say, opens on March 23rd. But with the partners that we have brought into our circle, that offers us certain spaces to, say, highlight some artists or create group shows or have solo exhibitions.
So let me just stop you there. What does that mean, the partners that you brought in? Who are the partners, and how does that work?
Sure. So at the Seattle Public Library, we had a show. And as part of this show, a woman who's from the Skokomish Nation, she had submitted work, and we saw in her perhaps some potential to be a curator of some sort. So we offered her an internship to be a community curator, and she accepted, and she curated the show at the Seattle Public Library from the submissions that we received, the overall submissions. And the show she chose to create was about Coast Salish women. And so that show specifically featured five Coast Salish women with different genres of artwork at the Seattle Public Library Gallery. A show that we have going in right now is at the Seattle Art Museum. They, too, gave us a gallery space, and that's a show of graphic designers. And
now, graphic designers, is that relating to this open call? There are graphic designers that came in through this open call?
Yes.
It's all the same show in different venues, mm-hmm. which is the different partners.
Right. Yeah, there's different venues for different – yeah, the different venues are partners in the overall Yahao exhibition. But we have these satellite opportunities to focus spotlight on maybe underserved communities or also exceptional artists who have been doing work for a while but perhaps haven't had a chance to have their first solo show. So, for example, this graphic designer, Cindy Chischilly. She's Dene, or Navajo, as some people know. She is a master artist, but she's never once had an exhibition in a gallery. So she's currently installing her artwork at the Seattle Art Museum. So we're trying to leverage these partnerships and these experiences in this way to, you know, open up spaces for people's career. But then we also just worked with the Vera Project in Seattle, and we had a teen-curated teen art show. So it was an opportunity there to, again, nurture new curatorial voices, but also to provide a safe space for a certain community, in this case, teen artists.
And they're all pulling from the same pool that you've brought in through this open call?
Exactly. And everybody who's in these satellite shows will still have a piece at the King Street Station. So think of a spider web, essentially. The King Street Station is the hub at the center of that spider web, and every single artist who is submitted will have at least one piece in that space. And then there's all of these partner sites that will help to inform or amplify the work of the artist in that space.
That's very exciting. And the title, Yahow, what does that mean?
It means to do the work, and it's about together we lift up the sky, and that truly refers to just sometimes you got to just do the work, and when you do the work, we are all uplifted by that energy.
And so to step back from all of this, that's really exciting. You're obviously very energized by this show. It's a huge undertaking. What are you learning from it, or what insights have you had, or maybe just surprises? I mean, I'm kind of interested in talking about some of the art specifically, but we don't have to. Is there something that after being involved in this process and seeing things happening, what do you think from all the work that came in? Has that changed how you see Indigenous people and creatives or anything related to that?
I mean, there's been a lot of lessons, everything from my co-collaborator, Asia Tell, just recognizing what an incredible force she is as someone in their 20s, how their vision, how their energy, how their millennial aesthetic is humbling to me in understanding her true commitment to community and really doing the work. Doing it and doing it for the sake of a bigger picture. I've been grateful and amazed to watch her as a young person just lead us in this kind of pioneering experience. Also, it's been pretty beautiful to see who's come out. We've had young people submit work. We've also had elders submit work, elders who may not have ever shown their work in public before or thought of themselves as artists, but say their granddaughter had encouraged them, you know, Grandma, come on, you should, you know, turn in your artworks. It's beautiful. And seeing how families have been supporting one another to be seen and heard through this process. We had one family from Northern BC Territory drive down 8 hours just to bring this incredible piece of raw stone art to Seattle to drop off for the show, and the entire family came. And I guess it doesn't surprise me, but it's a reminder how important the wealth of family is within Indigenous communities, and we have an opportunity through this process to live it and see it and breathe this cultural value daily, which is, especially right now, very life-affirming to see the incredible amount of support and really, I guess, in adhering to the title of the show, Together We Lift the Sky, there's just so many instances and examples of kind of mutual respect and uplifting that's happening through, you know, making this show happen.
It's so exciting. So the show is obviously going up in satellite places. It's also has a main element. When will it all be up, or when does the
mm-hmm.
main
sure.
show go up? Yeah.
Yeah, the big central unveiling will be at King Street Station in Seattle on March 23rd, and we're having a giant community celebration at that time.
Well, very exciting. I'm so glad we talked about that particular show. And for people who can't come and see it, of course, there'll be links in the interview so people can attend if they'd like to or see it afterwards. Will any portion of this be online as well or accessible by the Internet?
Yeah, please follow us on Instagram, Yehaw Show, YEHAW Show. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and we also have a website. And so we're hoping to have a presence on Vimeo, too, as we have some filmmakers and audio artists, and we're hoping to include some sort of plug-in, so when you go to our website, you can see their work, too.
It's wonderful. I wish we could have talked about all of your projects, but I think that's a very exciting one to discuss, and it seems to reach into so much else that you've done. I want to ask you one more question, which is what I always ask at the end. What are you reading right now, just for your own sake? What's on your nightstand, essentially?
Sure. Crazy Rich Asians. And I'm reading it because my 17-year-old son is reading it in a film theory class in high school. And what they're doing is they're comparing novels with TV adaptations. And so since he's reading it, I decided to go ahead and read it and so we can watch the film together, too.
That's exciting. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure, Tracy, and I wish you great success with the opening coming up.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be able to have this time with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.